Yeah, I've only got 50,000 words to go before the end of NaNoWriMo. I've got everything I need except for content.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and together we are the Functional Nerds. We were off last week due to storms knocking out John's power, but we're back now, aren't we, John?
With a brand new intro. That was nice, Patrick.
Was that cool? You know what?
That was good. That was good.
I totally stole that from Sports Night. It's on Netflix.
Oh, I watched all of that. That was my favorite show for a while.
I loved that show.
That's probably why I liked your intro so much. We're doing that now. I watch that every week now.
I have no problem with that. I thought that was good. A cool intro.
That's a great intro. All right, we're totally stealing that. Good, good. Well, I am John Anilio. that's very good. Yeah, I live in New Jersey, and I was one of those people who lost their power for about 4 days. So went out on Saturday, didn't come back till Wednesday, and fortunately I was able to live with my in-laws for those couple of days. But we did have one day at home where we were, you know, everything was candlelight, and it was crazy. never seen anything like it before. And like I said, we were fortunate. We had someone to stay with, so it wasn't too bad for us. It just sort of upended things. But
Patterson was without power too.
Patterson, New Jersey?
No, Jeff Patterson.
Jeff Patterson. Where does he live? He lives in...
Somewhere.
Yeah. Some people in Connecticut still don't have it. You know, it's crazy. As of, you know, Tuesday, whatever today's date is. But it was not. I mean, freak weather. You know, we got like 18 inches of snow or something, you know, and the trees all had their leaves and just knocked down a bunch of power lines like all over the state. And a lot of people lost their power. So
that's kind of nuts. That's the storm that hit us here. It hit us on Wednesday and knocked out power for, I think they said like 60,000 people. And then it just moved on and moved to you. And it hit you guys. I mean, it built up while it was moving away from us. Because, I mean, we got a lot of snow. I think we got like 10 inches. And it did knock out my power, but that was a completely different problem. It actually, I mean, I had my electrical box and my meter had to be replaced. I mean, it was this big, huge thing. But anyway, that storm built up some power and hit you guys hard.
Yeah, it was nuts. Well, anyway, but as much as people love talking about weather and hearing about weather, I do write songs about science fiction and fantasy, including the NaNoWriMo song that you heard at the beginning of the show. I did do NaNoWriMo. It's funny, I've talked about this quite a bit, but I am not a writer, even though we interview writers just about every week. I'm not a writer, but I did do National Novel Writing Month in 2006 and 2007, and I actually completed it and wrote my 50,000 words, which, you know, they are not fit for human eyes. but I did them for some reason. I was compelled to do it, and I did, and I enjoyed the process, and I really think it is what led me indirectly to doing what I do now with, you know, sci-fi songs and sort of being involved in the science fiction and fantasy community. So NaNoWriMo has, you know, quite a special place in my heart. It has a lot of significance. It does. It really, you know, I think it really led me to where I'm at now, and I'm very happy with where I'm at now. So I did write that song about a year after the second time I did NaNoWriMo. So I've had that song out for a couple of years now, but I do like to sort of bring it around again in November. So that is available for absolutely free. So if you just go to johnanilio.com, you can get it for free.
I always have a conflict in November with NaNoWriMo. It's called Nano Procrastimo.
You're good. You win that every year, right?
I do, yeah.
Very good.
Great. I actually put that on Twitter, and I had a bunch of people like favorite that as their favorite tweet.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I get a good idea every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, anyway, on the show tonight, we did interview KV Johansson. She's the author of Black Dog, which is out through Pyre Books right now. I finished it today. So it was really nice to be able to talk to her on the day that I finished it. So we hope you enjoy this interview with her. And joining us tonight on the podcast is KV Johansson. KV is the author of Black Dog, a new book out through Pyre Publishing. I just finished it today, and I really loved it. So we're really excited to have her on the show. KV, say hello.
Hello.
I'd like to get. Oh, those dogs back there, KV. Are those your dogs?
Yeah, that is actually just one dog, and he's been being very good and very quiet up till now.
And there's
I don't know what he thinks he hears.
There's pictures of this dog, John. I don't know if you've seen the picture. This is a gorgeous dog.
I started laughing. I was laughing because I have KV's website up, and I see the dog, and then all of a sudden I started hearing the barking. Yep. So it's that's okay. That's a theme through all our podcasts of, like, you know, half of the authors have dogs, and they always pipe up at some point during the interview. So you're just keeping a long tradition of of our podcast.
I think it was the hello that did it.
Yes. KV, once again, she is the author of Black Dog, ironically. Black Dog is it's a really interesting fantasy that I did just finish today. And it is not, I would say it is a very original book. There are influences in this that you don't read everyday fantasy. So, Kevin, maybe you could talk about some of your background in terms of some of the things that you've studied and, you know, some of the things that influenced you that may have gone into the book.
Well, I have a degree in medieval studies, a master's, and I've always been quite interested in history and in dead languages. And I think, you know, even after I was done being a grad student, I kept on reading a lot and in those fields. And I think this really sort of fed into Black Dog and into the other things I write as well. Just this interest in not so much the High Middle Ages, but the earlier period, the sort of, you know, post-Roman period, the Dark Ages, and the idea of kind of cultures on the edges and places where cultures are mixing, kind of very, very interesting places for sort of new things to happen.
Well, and in Black Dog, you know, there is, there's talk of the gods, and they play a pretty important role in the book. And, you know, there are sort of different cultures colliding. And, you know, one of the things that stuck with me in reading the book is, even on the back cover, James Eng has a blurb about the Tibetan style religion. So I don't know if that's just James' own interpretation of it, or if that's something that you, sort of specifically tried to put in the book, some sort of Asian influence. So what would you think, say about that?
Well, it is sort of a Silk Road type area. It's an area in which you have a lot of travelers from sort of both ends of the world passing through. The Tibetan aspect, it was more the geography, really, I think, in the mountains. I wasn't thinking of Tibetan sort of pre-Buddhist religions particularly, but, you know, you start reading about, you know, the people, the material culture, of course, religion comes into it and starts to influence things a bit too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, and in the book, you know, it's, the religion is kind of interesting because the gods are very present within it. You know, the gods are characters themselves. I mean, in fact, that's, you know, who the main character is. Adelisa, is that how you'd pronounce the main character?
I say Adelisa.
Adelisa. Okay, very good. Yeah. So Adelisa is sort of the main character. And really, in some ways, I think the book can be described as sort of, you know, either a coming of age of Adelisa as a character, or a, you know, almost like a hero's journey of Adelisa. So, you know, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, about, you know, how the gods are so present in that.
Yeah, the gods in this world are really, they're not great, distant, omnipotent beings. They're very local spirits. And so, and they're bound to their place in the world. So they don't usually go traveling the way Atalissa does. But they know all their people personally, and they're almost more family. They're not something that you sort of worship and expect to fix everything for you. You revere them, and you sort of feel that they're there for you, but you have to be there for them as well, because your gods have to be defended from dangers. They're not, they might do a bit of smiting, but they're not capable of large-scale smiting. And so some of that's up to you. And in a way, they're almost, you know, like sort of older members of the family. They've got this, you know, long wisdom, long experience. You hope they're wise. That you can, as a people, as a folk, that you can rely on. But you owe them something too.
Yeah, well, and that was, you know, the thing that was, you know, so interesting to me about the book is just, you know, how everything was sort of intertwined. Oftentimes in a lot of the fantasy that I've read, as you said, the gods are this sort of omnipotent, you know, to be worshipped, or, you know, that's the way that these sort of humans in the world sort of view the gods. And although the gods in Black Dog are revered, you know, really in a lot of ways, you know, they are just almost like other human characters in it. Now, is there any particular culture or any particular, you know, ethnic group or anything you were thinking about when you were sort of devising the gods of Black Dog?
Not really. I was a little bit influenced in Atalissa being incarnate as a human by something I'd come across, I think maybe in National Geographic, about, I've even forgotten the country. I think it was in the Himalayas somewhere. But anyway, it was a culture where there are believed to be gods or goddesses incarnate as human girls. But it's sort of a temporary thing. And so for a certain period of time, they're an avatar of a goddess. And then they sort of outgrow it. But they're treated very well during that time.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's, you know, last time on the show, we had Brian Thomas Schmidt, who is an author, and he writes science fiction, but there is a little bit of a religious aspect to his writing as well, and he's a Christian writer. Well, I shouldn't say he's a Christian writer, but that comes through a little bit in his work, and we talked a little bit about that last week, and we talked about how quite often in fantasy, in particular, you know, there will be sort of made up religions, but they're clearly modeled after religions that exist in our own world. You know, there's the, you know, one religion is Christian and one religion is Islam, and they sort of play off each other in the ways that we would sort of think in our world. And that was really the thing that I found most enjoyable about Black Dog, is that the reason I asked you, like, you know, did you base this on anything, is because I didn't. It didn't seem like anything that I've ever read before. I wasn't thinking like, oh, this is like, you know, Buddhism, or this is like, you know, anything else. It really had this feel of authenticity, but of originality as well.
Well, the gods are really, I think if you were looking into our world, you'd have to go way back and look at the idea of, you know, the very small gods and the local, where you just have a god, like a sacred spring or something that's revered by the people around there, but, you know, two valleys over, they've never heard of it. That sort of idea, I think.
Well, you had mentioned sort of the medieval times when cultures were coming together. So you were talking about a little bit of Roman, a little bit of British or Celtic or Norman or Saxon or however far back you want to go. And when you talk about going back that far, when you look at Romans, I mean, they did have this whole pantheon of gods, lots of different gods.
And the idea too of, you know, like the Lares, these divinities that looked after a particular family.
Yes, you had your house, deities, you know, if you had your wine god, you had your grape god, you had your god of harvest. I mean, you name it, they had a god for it. And they stole most of those from the Greeks. So,
and anywhere else they came across.
Yes.
Too.
So, was that kind of what you were pulling from a little bit for this?
Not consciously. It was more just something that evolved out of kind of shaping the character of Atalissa. Sort of, she was there before I knew really what the gods were like, and as she developed, that kind of created the gods of the world.
Very cool.
Because of sort of the demands that what I needed her to be for the story, I guess, is what shaped the world, really.
Well, and another thing that really comes up quite a bit in the book is, you know, this idea of, you know, the title of the book is Black Dog, and Black Dog is a character that sort of, you know, without giving too much away of the book, he's an entity, we call him a spirit or some sort of power that will sort of take on a host. A lot of the book is sort of how that plays out of the human and whether they're getting along or not getting along that's putting it mildly at points in the book. So, that's something that I've seen in literature and on TV before, but where do the ideas for that come from? The sort of idea of a host, of a spirit sort of inhabiting a human, what were some of the things you were thinking about when you were coming up with those ideas?
Well, the book actually began with that idea, with the idea of this man, Holosean, being possessed by this guardian spirit. And so it wasn't really kind of a conscious thing, because that was the seed that started it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've always been interested in this idea of people... people having this other element to them, whether it's possession or some sort of buried power within them that has a bit of a will of its own. It's sort of an interesting thing to explore.
Sure. And one of the things I always think about when these stories comes up, and especially if it's something older, is how much of our ideas of sort of possession or, a host, what are some of those things that come from in terms of maybe someone that just had a split personality, or someone who was schizophrenic or something like that? I don't know if that's anything you thought about.
Everyone's got a little bit of that in themselves too. When you think, how could I have done that?
Yeah, no, it's the book really plays on that quite a bit, and the other thing is that and this is sort of going back to Tolkien a little bit of this idea of names and how some characters have more than one name throughout the book, and I love that. I mean, to me, names are so important. I really value names. I just think they have power. That sounds a little corny to say that, but I really think names have power. So I love that about Tolkien, about how, there are different names for the same character, and you have that quite a bit throughout the book. And I know that you are pretty into Tolkien yourself. So I don't know. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I do seem to have a lot of characters with multiple names. Even in my kids' books, a lot of the characters seem to end up with more than one name. I'm not quite sure why, but I suppose it's some sort of latent influence of Tolkien, just sort of kind of deep in the compost that I write out of. But I mean, you do find that historically too, where you have people and one history calls them one name, and another history written in the country next door, we'll call them by another name, and there'll be, various sort of cognomens given to them, various sort of nicknames or honorifics that they'll be known by, and you'll have people who are, you see it in Shakespeare, where you see characters, addressed by their title, by their holding, like Cumberland for the Duke of Cumberland, say. It's a more modern example, but these are all sort of different facets of the same personality, but sort of performing a different role when you're addressing someone one way. It implies perhaps a different expectation of them.
Well, and one of the things I noticed quite a bit, in fantasy, when there is these sort of many names or multiple names for one character, I think, as an author, there's a lot of room for sort of playing with that a little bit and having a little bit of mystery within the book. When you sort of have a character and you're referring to them as one name, and then later on you can refer to them as another name and sort of reference back, and you can have some nice reveals and some other things like that. I don't know if that has anything to do with your choice of having multiple names.
It might a bit, because it can create a bit of surprise. I think in Black Dog, most of the multiple names were, sort of intentional in our kind of unfolding as they go. They're people taking aliases mostly, mm-hmm. Except in the case of Moth, who has several names, which really do go with different personalities. But there is there was a prior short story about Moth and Mickey, and so I wasn't sort of thinking of Moth as a character who had to really surprise people, even though I suppose most people reading Black Dog haven't read the short story. It's still her multiplicity is kind of given away in the short story.
Is that short story available out there somewhere?
It's The Storyteller, and it's in a collection called The Storyteller that I did. That's just for sort of oddments. This one Black Dog connected story, and there's one about an Arthurian story about Merlin's daughter. There's a retelling, sort of a prose poem about the Battle of Maldon, and then there's another unrelated secondary world fantasy in it. So it's just sort of four oddments, but the title is The Storyteller.
Hmm. And where can people pick that one up?
I think you can order it at most bookstores. It's pretty widely distributed, although it's a small press down this end of the country.
Now, maybe, you know, I read in your bio that you are, I think it says part of the Tolkien Society. So maybe you could talk a little bit about sort of your feelings about Tolkien and about some of his influence possibly on your own work.
Does that mean that your name also appears in the credits and the extended versions of the movies?
No.
Oh. 'Cause I know that a lot of people are in those credits.
Has anyone ever watched them all?
I knew a guy in Chattanooga. Actually, I worked with his wife, and he was part of some fan club or something that he was one of the people that got his name in the credits on the extended DVDs, and he made you watch them. You had to go through the credits with him so that he could pause where his name was. And he could show you. Look there in that point 4 font that you can barely see. It's right there. There's my name.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason that I'm in the Tolkien Society is because I do have a lot of interest, you know, in Tolkien as a writer, and just an interesting way of keeping up on, you know, new research that's being done.
Were you involved in that whole discovery of the new artwork that they had forgotten about? Did you see that?
I'm not sure if that it's been about a month since the last newsletter. So if it's very recent, I haven't heard about it.
The Guardian UK just released a bunch of pictures. Apparently they were hand drawn and in some cases watercolors that he did of the Lonely Mountain and of Smaug, and various different versions of it that actually show the progression of the changing of the landscape around the Lonely Mountain as he moved forward.
I've seen a lot of his artwork, but no, I haven't seen that article in The Guardian, although I will look it up after.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Let's see, what was the original question?
I was just going to say, what would Tolkien's influence on your own work be?
Yeah, semicolons, long sentences, lots of landscape.
Well, one of the things, about Black Dog that I really did enjoy is that it's a long book, but it does not read like a long book. It's over 500 pages, but it does not feel that long. It seems it felt very focused to me. So I don't know if that's, you know, some sort of plotting stuff that you got from Tolkien or where that comes from.
I'm not sure either. I was quite impressed with how long it was. Because I see it on the computer screen, you can say X number of words. But to actually like heft the book in the hand and think, oh, that's longer than I thought. It didn't feel like that long a book. But I tend to write by kind of revising in these sort of rolling layers as I go. So by the time I finally get to the end of a book, a lot of it has been rewritten many, many times. And I think that may tend to, refine it a lot.
Now, Black Dog, you know, it has a very definitive ending. Is it a standalone book? Are there going to be other books in this world? What's the plan there?
It's not a standalone in my mind, but as a story, it stands alone. But there are still five. Okay, I'm in the middle of something else, so I've kind of lost count. But I think there are still five. Four. Yes, there are four devils unaccounted for still.
Right, right, right.
And so the way I look at it is that, you know, there can be more stories. Hopefully there will be more stories, but not about Atalissa, obviously. Mm-hmm. Her story has come to a good resting point, but Moth and Mickey will go on. And there's some hints in Black Dog that there are things going on, in both the West and the East that might bear investigation. And, you know, some hints that some things are going on that the Black Dog may be involved in eventually, too, without giving anything more away.
I really enjoyed the book quite a bit. Like I said, it is quite a lengthy book, and I finished it pretty quick. For me, I finished it pretty quick. I'm a horribly slow reader, so the fact that I was able to knock out 550 pages in, you know, a couple weeks is pretty good for me. So thank you so much for writing. I really, really enjoyed it. So other than Black Dog, obviously that came out about a month or so ago. You know, where can people find do you have any other projects that you want to talk about before we wrap it up? Is there anything else that people could check out of your work out there?
Adult readers might like that short story collection, The Storyteller. But I also have a teen fantasy series. The title's The Warlocks of Telverden. And the first book in that series is Nightwalker. And it's, you know, more a typical younger teen fantasy. It's, you know, the heroes 14, 13, along that, you know, kind of growing up, etc. It's good. It's fun. But it's a four-book series, and the middle two books in the series are about the same guy as a man in his 20s. And so there's a lot there that would appeal to adult readers as well, just, you know, because of the things he's dealing with. They're more psychologically complex than the 14-year-old is dealing with. So this series kind of edges into adult territory, except for being shorter.
Well, a lot of YA is crossing over into and getting a lot of adult readers, so...
Yeah, so I think Warlocks of Telverden might appeal to Black Dog readers while they wait and hope.
And, you know, people can go and check out your website, which is kvj.ca.
Yeah.
Because you are Canadian. That's a nice, easy website, though. That's nice to...
Yeah, it's nice.
So they could check you out there. Are you on any of the social media, on your Facebook or Twitter or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, and I've got a couple of blogs, one of which has lots of dog stuff.
And where's that?
Let's see, that one's The Wild Forest, .wordpress.com. There's a link from my website.
Oh, okay.
And then my other blog is about a manga project that a friend and I are doing, which is a manga adaptation or a manga style adaptation or original English language manga or whatever you want to call it. But a manga adaptation of the short story, The Storyteller.
Oh, cool.
And that one is mangasaga.wordpress.
So are you not doing the Twitter?
No. I think I have enough to do.
I don't see what you're so afraid of. I mean, it doesn't take up all of my day.
But I like to sit at my computer without any connection to anything except, you know, BBC Radio 3. And write. That's the important thing. Writing.
Well, that's why Scrivener has a full screen mode. When you're in full screen mode, you can get no alerts from Scrivener.
Very good. All right. Well, KB, well, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone go and check out her website and go check out Black Dog. It's out right now. You will not be sorry. It's a great book. I really enjoyed it. So, KB, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks. It's been nice talking to you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that interview with KB Johansson, author of Black Dog. Go and check that book out. I highly recommend it. I really enjoyed it. Once again, for me this week, I have the NaNoWriMo song out for Absolutely Free. I also put the I Should Be Writing song, which is the theme song from Earl Lafferty's podcast. I figured, you know, that's a nice theme for the month of November. So both those songs, NaNoWriMo and I Should Be Writing, available for free at my website, johnanilio.com. You can follow me at twitter.com/johnanilio, and I'm on Facebook and the Google Plus and all that kind of stuff as well. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I have to confess something to you, John.
Okay.
I prefer the acoustic version of I Should Be Writing.
Cool. Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up, because I was listening to that the other day, and you know, it's I think I might too. I've sort of performed that song a lot, and you know, I knew when I wrote that song, I knew I wrote it to be performed at that live podcast at Balticon with Murr. So I really, the guitar part in that is pretty busy. So it kind of stands on its own as an acoustic song. And, you know, it's also, it's what's weird with that one is that all the other stuff I added, it's very electronic-y, the other parts of it, which is not usual for me. And the reason I did that at the time was because I was recording that in the summer. At the time, I did most of my recording at my workplace. So all my electric guitars and my bass and everything were at school. And so I didn't have access to that stuff. So it's sort of acoustic guitars and electronic-y stuff. Which, you know, I do enjoy that, but, you know, my bread and butter is to have sort of the acoustic guitar, but lots of electric guitar stuff and everything too, and that does not have it. And I listened to that the other day, and I'm like, yeah, that's sort of missing. There should have been some electric guitar stuff.
I think the drums and the electric, it's very arena rock to me, and I don't think it fits well with the acoustic piece.
Yeah, it's a little something, but I do enjoy it. But it's looking back, I probably would have made different choices on that now if I was recording that now for sure. But
okay, well, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, they do have, so you can get both versions. You can get the acoustic version and the, you know, full on electronic version, arena rock version.
Hey, I also meant to ask you, did you see that Gene Simmons actually married Shannon?
I did see that, yeah.
That just kind of blew me away. Anyway, how's that for the way my weird brain works? That just came to mind when you said arena rock.
Yeah, well, you know, Kiss is a good example of the arena rock.
Yep, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Kiss. I want to point people to the SF Signal podcast, because there's some good stuff going on over there, and I think people should go listen if they're not already. Let's see what else. I've been doing posts over at atfmb.com, so people should check those out. I've also been doing the ATFMB column on Functional Nerds. I think people should check that out. They should also check out all of the wonderful content that our contributors put up on functionalnerds.com. We get a lot of book reviews.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of book reviews, so people should go check those out. Those are,
I just mailed out books to people about a week ago too, so we should get some more.
I was going to ask you about that.
I sent Paul 3 books.
Oh, when did you send them?
About a week ago.
Oh, he's already read them.
Well, that's what I figured. I'm like, you know what? Paul's good for this. He'll have these 3 read and reviewed in 2 weeks, so I'll just send everything that he asked for.
That's funny.
So Paul's got a couple. Kathy Russell's got one. LipTech has one. He's going to review one for us again. So LipTech. I saw online the other day, is he the assistant editor at Lightspeed?
Yeah.
Is that his title now?
Yeah, I think so.
So congratulations to our friend Andrew Liptak, who does some stuff for SF Signal and does an occasional reviews for us. He is the, I hope I'm not getting that wrong now, but I believe he is now the assistant editor at Lightspeed Magazine.
Well, so. And there's huge big stuff going on there. I mean, yeah. We were just talking about that off air. I don't know if you want to mention it.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead.
John Joseph Adams has purchased Lightspeed and Fantasy.
Yeah.
So he's going to be the publisher there now.
Yeah. No, that's really great news and really cool. And we know John Joseph Adams from World Fantasy. And, you know, he's done some stuff with us for SF Signal and some other stuff as well.
He's coming on the SF Signal podcast.
Fantastic.
We're going to talk about the Lightspeed and Fantasy thing. He's got they're doing an anthology that's coming out year one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's going to be over on SF Signal. People definitely need to go check that out.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm saying check that out a lot. I need a new phrase.
Check it? Does that work?
Check it. Hey, the other thing is our last episode was the Halloween kind of episode where I put all the Halloween stuff music. And I loved it. Someone on Twitter was like, oh my God, I had forgotten about DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince doing A Nightmare on My Street.
Mm, I saw that. That was very interesting. Very funny. Alrighty. Well, everybody, I hope you all have a good week. And Patrick is over at atfmb.com and at atfmb on Twitter.
All things from my brain.
And I believe next week we are having Geeky Julia Sherrod on the show. Is that correct? I think that's next week.
You would know better than I do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's going to be on. Jules is great. She's does some stuff for Geek Mom, does her own blog, does a radio show, really great supporter of geeky music and geeky stuff in general. Has had Patrick and I both as separate guests on her show. So we are returning the favor and having her on the show. We will talk lots of geeky stuff. Jules is a trip. You will enjoy her next week. So we will see you next week.
Yes, well, I have to remind you each time, we don't actually see the people.
No, no.
It is audio.
You will hear our voices next week.
Yes.
All right, everybody. See you next time.
Bye.
Hear us next time.
Yeah, I've only got 50,000 words to go before the end of NaNoWriMo. I've got everything I need except the prize. Who decided to have Thanksgiving this time of year? Don't they know I'm trying to launch my writing career, but I've only got 50,000 words to go before the end of NaNoWriMo. I thought that it'd be easy, but it's not. Yeah, I've only got 50,000 words to go.